Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi guys, welcome back to the podcast. Before we introduce our next episode, just to ask you for a small favour, I really appreciate the hours that some of you are investing into watching the podcast that we've done in the past, but I'd like to ask you to do me one favour that would take you seconds. If you enjoy the show, please hit the subscribe button, and if you enjoy any show in particular, please click on the thumbs up. It'll make a massive difference to the podcast. So thanks very much for your continued support, feedback, and I hope you enjoy this one.
So they had to send one of security guards to McDonald's.
No way.
And I swear to God, they came back with like 25 Big Mac meals or McChicken meals. And
that's helicopter Sundays.
That's what the player was eating. Mental. And when you tell people, aye, good one. I'm like, I'm telling you, that's what happened. And we ended up going into the tune, into Tiger, I think it was, with our tracksuits on. Big Marvin's got his t-shirt, keep believing. It was crazy.
That's the thing, Big Marv, that just seemed to capture everybody. And I don't think I realised as much at the time until I got to know the biggin, and he told me how bad that injury was, and they had to sign a disclaimer saying that if we played on and something happened, Rangers were no liable for any payouts or insurances, and his contract would basically get put in the bin. And what drove him was not only Rangers to win the league, but possibly even more important to the biggin was Trinidad trying to get to the World Cup. And the mad thing was, he got both. And then when he got to the World Cup, he couldn't play, because that's when it eventually did go. And did you know how bad his injury was at the time?
It was crazy, because I played in that game, Dundee, away. And I think we were cruising. I'm sure we were beating them easy. It wasn't an easy game, but I'm sure we were maybe 2-0 up or something. And I was playing in midfield, and I got taken off, and I remember sitting on the bench, and it happened to him. And he was running, but he was dragging his leg, and we're like, that's not a good one. And we were thinking, okay, maybe he's just telling me that he's like strained his calf or something. He's just not about to put all his pressure on it. And it was the day after the game that the doc's like, no, he's done something to his knee. And it was the League Cup final, it might have been a week after or 2 weeks after. And he's like, no, I'll be fine for it, I'll be fine. And I'm like, he's done his cruciate, he can't be fine 2 weeks. But to be fair, the gaffer says to him, look, give you every opportunity. I think the gaffer was just trying to make him feel better. Give you every opportunity to play in the game, but your cruciate, you're talking 6 months. He's like, no, I'll be fine to play. And then to be fair to the gaffer, he did give him right up until the night before the game. And he couldn't play. But I was grateful, because I was at that time it was the old, we had the squad numbers, but the cup finals was always 1-11.
Aye, that's right.
My number was 12. So I knew that I was in the fucking plane. But then the gaffers come in and say, look, Marvin's not going to make it, so you'll step in for him. And I was like, all right, fine.
Incredible big guy. I've been fortunate enough going on over the last sort of 5-6 years and spent a bit of time with him and just came and done some like presentations and stuff for us. I went to Athens to supporters down and spent 3-4 days in the same room. Great to get to know the big guy. And he seems like one of the most happiest, positive people I've ever came across. I've never seen him without that big mad laugh he has and the big smiley teeth. But is he like that all the time?
All the time. All the time. It's actually annoying because even when you're in a bad mood, you still get a big laughing face. It's funny because the first time I met Big Man, I obviously played against him that, but we went pre-season to Germany. It was like Germany or Austria. It was right on the border. And that was when Big Dad on that signed. We signed Dragan Bladenovic. So, they used to document it at one time. So we went and gets to the hotel and the gaffer's like, right, reading the rooms out. Bob Malcolm, Marvin Andrews. I'm like, all right, good big man, good laugh.
You remember him?
Nice boy, I was rooming him, right? So, first night, pre-season, so I need my sleep. 2 a.m, I hear him up talking, I'm thinking he's on the phone. I'm like, the fucking big bastard, man, he's woke me up, fucking. So, I didn't turn around and look at him because I'm thinking he's on the phone. Get back to sleep an hour later, see him again. I turned around, I thought, big man, I'm fucking trying to sleep. He's up, he was reading his Bible. And I'm like, I woke up in the morning, I says, Gaff, you need to get me out the room for him, man. He's fucking up at 3 a.m. reading a Bible. but that's what he'd done every night. So I think he had to be in a room himself. He had to. Right. It's no business fair on him because obviously I don't have the same religious beliefs that he has.
Yeah.
And it was the same with the other boy, Hamid Namuchi. He was a Muslim, so he had to eat. Sometimes he was eating like daylight or wasn't allowed to eat. I don't know what it was.
Yeah, he was fasting during daylight.
He daylight and then he was eating during the night.
Aye.
So he was the same. He had to go in a room himself because of that. He was up eating. I don't know who he shared the room with somebody and they were the same. We can't sleep because he's up eating, aye? But no, big man was brilliant. That was the first time I met him. I'm like, Jesus Christ, I need to get him out of my room.
Talk about eating in Big Marv.
He can eat, can't he? Oh, he's always been like that, to be fair. Always. I don't even know how he puts what he doesn't put weight on. The amount he eats. It's mental.
No, we landed in Athens. Big George, my mate for Greece, picked us up at the airport, took us to the hotel. Before we'd even went to rooms, got sat down for a lunch. We've ordered whatever we ordered, right? But he'd ordered a salad starter. This big salad bowl came, plonked it down, huge, right? So big, it's like, geezer, right? A couple of bits of dressing, both notes like he's a shovel. So then the guy comes with the starters. So I can't remember what I've got, what Big George's got, and there's a wee bowl of salad for thing, and he's looking like that. Who ate the table salad? It was for a lot of stuff that shared with our mates, right? Oh. He went and got another bowl. The big guy had wolfed into the whole lot. She's two big, I mean, he eats healthy.
Yeah.
But Christ, I've never seen anybody eat like Marvin Andrews.
Have you seen him with his tap off?
Mate, I shared a room with him for 3 days.
Right, so he's ripped, but huh? You know, you never be at the gym. See when he came to Rangers.
Shut up.
I swear to God, I used to say to him, big man, how the hell have you got your build? How did you get your build? Because he was never in the gym. And he's like, I used to, when he was young, his job was, he used to work for the
brewer.
Carib. He says, so I used to have to take like 6 pallets of beer up a hill, drop them off, and then back down again, keep doing that. That's how we end up getting his figure.
No, he's ripped. And I mean, that's his real after his playing days. And I remember after the lunch, went out into the room. It was amazing because we walked in and George had, we were playing a game for them that night and we were going to a couple of events and stuff. And he had strips made for us. He had them all laid out in the bed and a tracker or something like that. Andrew's 4, Houston 5 on the 2 beds, right? But the room, it was weird, it was quite a big room, but the beds, normally you have like a bedside cabinet, a wee space, and then another bedside cabinet, another bed. So the beds are maybe 6 feet apart. For some reason, had one totally bedside cabinet between these 2 beds, so it was like a fit apart, right? So he goes into the room, right, and I'm like, oh, that's cracking, jersey's not. My biggin, he's like, Craig, I need to go to the bathroom, do you want to use it before me? And I was like, no, you're all right, biggin, you crack in. thing. I mean, they like to clean his trough for a minute, but it's away, right? So the thing is, in the toilet, right? And I've looked at the bed and I went, I can't even, that freak you out being a foot away from somebody. So I've pulled the beds out. I put the two bedside cabinets in between the two of them and I've spaced it out so there's about 4 or 5 foot of difference. And I'm just finishing as the big one came out. He's like, what are you doing, Craig? I says, I'm protecting my underpants. He's like, what are you talking about? I say, see if I get up at 3 a.m. with your big black face out away from me. I says, I'd shite myself. But he came out the bathroom, he started off, and I'm like, ah, you wouldn't want to take a pop bath, would you?
I can remember he's when he just started training with us, because obviously we're used to training with like amateurs, so everybody's always good in the ball. Big man wasn't the best on the ball, great defender. And to be to go better on the ball, but used to do all the wee, now the wee boxes, the wee toros. So the boys are all popping that about. Big man used to love tackling, smashing people. And I remember the ball bounced in the middle of the box one time and Fergie's went in. And he's in me seat to just like knock it by Big Marv, and Big Marv's put his foot up, man, broke his nose.
Serious.
Never seen Fergie Gaffey's nuts. So yeah, yeah, big fucking useless bastard, right? You did. Broke his nose in training. Oh, it was funny. But the big man, to be fair, he gave everything in training. See what he'd done in a match day, he'd done that every day in training. Didn't he give a shit who you were? He was.
He done it in Athens and we're only playing seven aside.
But that's how Nemdy went near him in training. Oh, he used to just put his head anywhere. And see if you kicked him in the face, he would go up and he would just like wipe it away and just go on with it.
You were fortunate, you played with some great players. You're just rhyming them off there, you know, when he started. You're even going to look at the bits where have a lad, he's not great players, and Big Purcell and the Boers and all these people. Fantastic company you were in. But who were the characters?
The characters in that dressing room. We had probably a wee group of maybe seven or eight is it used to always having a half a joke every day. Big Dado Purcell was good. Even though he was a foreigner, he was always involved in like shenanigans in the mornings. And that. He would always be involved in it. You would get people that would just weren't interested and they would come in, want to get their training done and then back to their families and things. But no, most of the boys were good. It was probably me, Fergie, Big Craig Moore, Stevie Hughes, Griggsy, Moros, Big Stevie Thompson. Most of the Scottish ones are the English speaking ones would, and then you would get like half on humans and that they would put their wee bits in now and again and have a laugh and a joke. But I think it was five years, used to travel for Hamilton. It was called the Shandy Bus. This is another one, you tell people stories and they're like, no chance. So it was a time in it, all these sports scientists were coming in and they were saying, you can't drink now as much as what you used to. It's no, can't do it. It was a boy, Frank Nuttall, came in, fitness coach. You can't drink and be training high level every day. So Kevin Muscat just came to the club. So it was me, Kevin Muscat, Fergie, Oz and Stevie Hughes. So we travel on together. We get the big Honda Space Shuttle. And so when the sports scientist says that, Muskie's like, all right, well, we Shandy time. So there was a rule where if somebody said Shandy time the way back for training, we had to go to the Bovo Bridge and at least have 2 pints. And I'm like, it's pre-season, you can't do that every day, man. We've done it every day. We went to New York for pre-season, 2 weeks there in New York, and we've done it every day there as well. The gaffer caught us, and he was going off his nut, and he's like, he's only going out. I'm not letting you out for a drink. He's taking a piss. And that was the year we won the treble. And
it made a difference.
Every day, pre-season, if we won the half-checked, we had a few pints.
And who was the outstanding players that he played with in our team at that time?
The outstanding player that when I was growing up would have been even playing in the reserves with Durante. Durante was frightening even though his knee was gone. I'd have loved to have seen him playing at his pump. Charlie Muller was frightening. Right. He's probably the one that had the most ability out of everybody. Mm-hmm. But I think the one who had the best career was Fergie. Mm-hmm. Even like Ronald DeBorn, they were frightening. The ability was unbelievable. But I just think for somebody that turned out week in, week out, it was every game, 8, 9 out of 10. For longevity as well, for 4 or 5 years, was Fergie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, every transfer window, we were signing 2-3 big players. And you're in a squad of 20-25 players, and you want to be playing. So you might have been that 11. So it must be a bit of a mind bender, because you want good players to come, but then you see, oh, Christ, he plays my position. Yeah. But out of all the signings and your duration at Rangers, what was the one that just got you? You thought, well, that's a proper signing.
I think De Boer would have been one of them. I remember all the speculation that Hudson Knapp was coming, then 20 minutes later, De Boer had signed and Hudson was away, and you thought, what's happening here? And then I can remember, I wasn't in the squad, but I can remember watching the game with the PSG and the Champions League game at the penalties, and Arteta was playing, and then we signed him. And I was like, Jesus Christ, how we managed to get him? He was frightening. But I think it was just at that time it was the norm when we were signing. We signed some players that we signed, I think we just signed for the sake of signing. Like we signed the big boy, Egon Ostenstad, was done brilliant for Southampton, then came up to Rangers and didn't look as if he'd played the game.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
It happens there, Bob. Is it players have maybe just had a good 18 months, 2 years by pure fluke, they've had a bit of form, or, you know, and then he was always going to go back down to that, or are these good players but just come to Rangers, and whether it's Scottish football or just playing for an institutional club the size of Rangers at Disney, what stops them?
I think it's a club. I think it's some people just, it's too big for the jersey. Like, I don't know, but you remember we signed two World Cup winners, Schiavone and Stefan Givers. Mm-hmm. And Givers scored a couple goals the first few games that he played, and then it wasn't getting a game. And then you're like, how the hell can he not play get a game for us? He just won a World Cup.
That Schiavone was bonkers, was he not?
He was probably he's one of the weirdest guys I've ever met. Really nice guy, right? But I remember he used to come in with remember the wee maestros he used to get?
No way.
He used to come in into the gym with that. He brought it off of France. That was his motto.
Austin Maestro,
he used to drive about one of them. Didn't care. Didn't won a World Cup. He wasn't giving a shit. That was his motto, and that was it. Didn't stand on white lines. Don't know if you've ever seen him. He used to, like, debut routines where he would jump on back and forward for the white light 18-yard box. Didn't
I've seen him doing weird things, but I never realised that.
Didn't stand on white lines, eh? Weirdo.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
My penalty then.
He was a good goalie, but he got injured and then he struggled.
I remember it well. I can't remember who. I'm sure it was a European night. And it was an innocuous thing. The boss said to me, pop up, run about the corner, maybe the 6-yard box. He just came out, grabbed it clean. You know, I don't think it was any interference, and he went down and stayed down. I'm sure, if my memory serves me right, it was at the Rangers end. I thought it was Copeland Road. I just this thing, might be wrong there, might be I heed it as I got on. Sometimes you details, but I just remember him going up for this ball, coming down and just game over. Was his knee done, wasn't it?
Aye, I think it was a bad one. He was out for months. I'm not sure. We see that he was there before Stefan Klaus. I think that's why we signed Stefan, because he was injured. I'm sure that was it.
I don't know. But was he lucky enough to play 20-30 games for Rangers? Didn't he get on anyone?
I don't think. I think when Stefan came in and he was number one, and I think he wanted to go, he wouldn't have been happy being number two. Anthony Yemi was there as well at that time, and he was.
See, when you look at some of the backup goalies with him, with Theo Snelders, with some really, we've always been blessed. I mean, if you look at the goalie McGregor, we've had generations of always having a good goalie. But even when you look at some of the backups that we had, maybe even Big Dibble, he came as a fan, you remember him. We've had some fantastic goalies and backups, and I can't remember the last time we had a dud, to be honest with you.
You look at the ones that now you've got, obviously, Butland, you've got McCrory in Scotland squad, and you've got McLaughlin, third choice, who was in the Scotland squad last year, and can't get anywhere near it now.
Aye.
So it's definitely a position we've been fortunate to be.
You think even a big game came up, and let's say McCrory and Butland were injured, God forbid, touch wood, it didn't happen, but if you heard they were injured and John McLaughlin was in goals next game, you wouldn't be that bothered. You wouldn't be like, oh God, it's going to be a tough gig, because you expect
them to do a job, didn't you?
They too, 99% of the other teams in Scotland are starters.
Mm-hmm.
We're just really, really fortunate, and we have been for some time. But Charbonnet, I've loved him. He used to start singing the French national anthem, his name and all that. It was crackers. See the foreign boys that you were fortunate enough to play with. Do you keep in touch with any of them?
We've got a group chat. Most of them's on it. Big Tory, Andrew Flo, Arthur Newman, Mikey Moles, Ronald Dubois. Most of the boys running about that era, they're all on it. So we have snow all the time, but now and again, like, something will come up, somebody will put something on Twitter or something, and it'll be a wind up. So you just fire it on the group chat, and then everybody starts taking a piss at them. Like Ronald Dubois, I've always on his back about his hair transplant. So, or Big Ammo, when he's on that Love Island thing, he was doing on Italy or something. Something that you probably don't know every day that's happened.
Yeah.
But when it comes up on social media, then you're like,
slaughtered.
That's right, in the chat, he's getting it. But
that's a bit bizarre, Tor Andre Flo. I came up, it beats your WhatsApp group with Lana Wolf, didn't it?
Oh, I had to delete that, fucking hell.
Are you not on it anymore?
No,
did you come with it?
That was one video too much.
I didn't have a clue, because when Big Stan started the group, there must have been about 200 people in it.
No, I thought it was a wind-up. Who's calling or sell that?
Well, see, obviously the ones that you've got the number in, like you'll show up, Bob Malcolm, maybe 10 or 12 that I had on my phone. But it was like 190 folk that I didn't know. It was just numbers. And then I woke up one Sunday and this video gets fired on, and you've got Stuart McQuarrie running for cover. And Stuart left the group, right? It's just a bizarre setup. It's just, even thinking that, you're on a Tor Andre Flo, I mean, that's just bizarre, the level of players that you came across in your time.
Victoria was one of the nicest guys. He was, it's Scandinavians, they don't really care about it, and they just got on with their life, and that's what he was like. He was, even though he was a fucking superstar, just get on with it. He was just a nice big boy.
And you mentioned Mikey Moles there, another guy that just a talented football player in that, Oliver Kahn.
Yeah, Mikey would have been almost certain he would have been at Man U or something. At that time, big, massive club, or even like Bayern Munich or somebody that was, they were flying at the top. He would have been, if he never got that injury, he'd have been definitely a big club.
No, it was. I just remember you could see it happening. It's clear. Where is he gone? There's only one thing he's doing. He's flew his box. He was nearly at the touchline, and Moles is gone. And you just, as soon as you seen Can coming out, you thought he's halving him here, and fucking didn't he half. But Mikey came to Sons of Struth one night to meet the kids and done a wee Q&A and stuff for him. And it was a goalkeeper. Any questions? Who's the best goalkeeper you ever played against? And he just turned around and says, Craig, you see his name, I can't see it. Mm. And I thought, that's going to hurt. It was horrific. There was no need for it. There was no need for it at all. A guy at Oliver Kahn stays in his box. He's got to round him, get a shot off, but he's came flying out the park nearly off the line, and just one intention. It was quite horrific. But he was some player. What was he like to try and play against at training?
Like his wee turn. They would do it every day in training. You knew you were doing it, but you just couldn't make it anywhere.
Body would move and the ball would go the other way.
Even though your brain knows he's doing it, your body just goes. And don't know how many players I've seen him doing that to Ibrox. And he ends it, turns, swivels and shoots, scores. Mm-hmm. He'd done it every second week. But great player. And he had to adjust his game because his knee, I think, when he got back fit again. Yeah, I think he lost a wee bit of his pace and all. but very strong. He's another one with his t-shirt off.
Oh, ripped. He does all the Thai boxing and all that, but...
Do you know who a player that never really got recognition that he deserves probably at that point, at that time when all that stuff was? Jonathan Janssen.
Did you? Aye.
He played a lot of games and scored a lot of goals.
And I remember, a lot of times he'd be out wide, but I remember, and I think it predominantly European games for some reason, they would put him through the middle.
Aye.
And I just thought that was, it was blinding there.
Aye, it was, finishing wise, it was like, both feet, mm-hmm. He was quick. Maybe he's touched, maybe let him down again, but he was always there running about. And even though you had Tory Underflow, Mikey Moles, De Boer, JJ was always in and about it, mm-hmm. but he didn't get the recognition that he probably deserved because he scored a lot of goals.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of important goals. Mm-hmm. I think it's just down to timing, and you know, if he was maybe one or two of that company weren't at Rangers at the same time as him, you know, he'd have folk to this day walking about with names in the back of the shirt, but he was certainly a good player, rapid as well.
Aye, very, very quick, both footed as well, scored goals with both feet.
But see the time you're playing, I mean, you played a lot of Old Firm games, I probably imagine maybe 15 or something Old Firm games, good number of European games. Who was the most difficult and talented player you played against?
For in an Old Firm game
or Old Firm European games or whatever.
I remember playing against Obafemi Martins and Adriano, mm-hmm. front of Milan. They were scary. The midfield that night for was Boy Pizarro, mm-hmm. and I keep on forgetting this boy's name, but he played with Argentina. He was unbelievable. He went to Leicester.
I'm the same as you. You can see him.
I just always, this is one name that I always forget. But this boy was frightening and all. And then to actually play against these guys who are playing in World Cups, no, it was something that you don't really think about, is it, when you're growing up?
Aye.
But in the all for him games, Larson seemed to be, wasn't involved in the game, and then he would score a goal, and you're like, ah, fucking hell,
was he coming?
Aye. And then, I don't think they had a squad that was just, maybe as talented as yours as in football wise, but their squad was more size.
A big squad at that time.
They played a certain way and it worked for them. And they had dig about them. They had Lennon and that in the middle of the park would put the boot in. Petrov was maybe their wee special one that would get forward and get goals. Didier Agat, he was just a flying machine up and down the right. They always had three big massive centre halves, Bobo Baldi. And it just did them the way they played. To be fair, they were good at it.
Ken, it's one of these things that my memory might be doing a disservice. Something will happen at an Old Firm game, I'm sure at Parkhead, you were on the bench. The corpus had to move you or something.
That was Ibrox.
Was it? I had to tell you, that's your memory. I've got a visual thinking that I thought it was a dugout at Parkhead. What happened?
No, it was we were playing. Me, I was on the bench. Remember the big boy Gary McKenzie? Mm-hmm. He's brought up Mark Hall, mad Rangers tattoos over his body and all that. His dad and all that was the same. So he's on the bench and all. But what happened? The ball rolled off the pitch and it was trickling down to Bosworth dugout. And then Neil Lennon's running off. So he's went to kick as if he's going to smash into the dugout. But he's turned, like he's done a wee drag back and like a piss take. But big Gary McKenzie's been like that and went for it. He's been like trying to block it. So we're up as myself laughing and I never jumped up at that point. But what happened was we had the throw in. So we've took the quick throw. Nacho's went up and I don't know if it was Nacho that scored or Big Dad opened, but we scored right for that. So I've run and I'm going like, get up, you. But the police, it was the police commander was in the dugout, the tunnel.
Aye.
He's obviously seen me going like that, get it up, yeah, to let me. He's thinking that I'm doing it to the Celtic fans. And it's no, I'm doing it to Lennon because of what he'd just done before that. Just came out back in the neck up the tunnel.
Shut up.
Yeah, he dragged him up the tunnel and says, next you'll be getting done for inciting a riot. I'm like, what are you talking about? We've just scored. And he's like, no, the gestures you're making to the Celtic fans. I went, I wasn't making gestures to the Celtic fans. It was Lennon for what he'd done. And he's like, right. And then he says, any more, you're getting took up, you'll be getting the jail basically. And I was like, all right, no worries, fucking hell. That's what it was.
We were just having a gig again back at Lennon.
It was nothing to do with any Celtic fans. It was just because what he done was funny, because I was pissed myself laughing because Big Gary McKenzie shit himself and turned his body in that way. And then obviously we've just been right up the park and scored straight for that throw in. It was mental.
Any other mad stories like that, memories, just daft things that have happened during games and in play that you're maybe as fans, you're watching the ball and other things that were never...
No, not really. It was, I can remember, also we used to go for pre-match before games. And a couple of times we dodgy ones, full bowl of pasta a couple of hours before a game, running out, fucking spewing up on the side of the pitch.
Hi guys, I'd just like to take a minute to talk to you about NordVPN, which is a company that I use their services. I use it majority of the time when I'm travelling abroad, when I want to keep up to date with the programmes I'm watching at the time, or more importantly to me, the sports that I want to watch when I'm abroad. So it doesn't matter where I am in the world, I can still watch the channels and the games and the sports that I want to. It also gives me security and some privacy that I'm looking for when I'm browsing the internet. They've got an exclusive huge discount available to viewers of the podcast, and they'll give you an additional 4 months free on top of whichever package you go on if you use our code. To get that, plus a 30-day, no quibble, money-back guarantee, all you need to do is log on to nordvpn.com/Craig, C-R-A-I-G, and that'll get you the exclusive discount plus the 4 months free on top of whichever package you go for. So go and give them a look, guys, and certainly I've had no problem using them in the times I'm travelling abroad, so I mostly use them. Thank you very much.
Big meal done it, I know. Same bowl of pasta, it's no settled in their stomach. Try to run about, fingers down the throat, slipping all that. But nah, there was nothing. No really John games, it was mostly stupid things would happen when you're away and trips and things like that.
You've lived the dream, right? It's coming up 2006. You've done over 100 games for Rangers, fair to say, easily. And it's coming to an end. How'd that come about?
I can remember, I don't think I was injured coming up to the end of the season, and I still had a year left, but I knew that Big Egg was leaving. And he said to me, "Well, I think you'd maybe look at trying to get yourself out." Was it sponsored dinner? No, the sponsored dinner was one of the last things at the events of the season. And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" But he knew he was gone, so we were all sitting having a drink with him outside with his wife and that. And he's like, "The manager that's coming in, I don't think he's your cup of tea." And I'm like, "Who is it?" He's like, "Gwen French, like, he's disciplinarian and he's going to work everybody hard and all this." And I went, "Right, fine." I says, "But obviously I want to be part of it." So, but then I found out he was doing all the, he'd done the mad fucking 7 day hikes across mountains and all that, went to the desert.
Sahara marathons.
And I'd heard a couple of stories about him. And I can remember going to, was it Vegas or San Francisco or something, with the NASA thing. And we'd done a press conference, and Alistair Johnson was there. So we had been out the night before, so I was kind of still had a wee bit of hangover. And a boy asked the question, how do you think?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Feel when the event comes, and I was trying to have a laugh and a joke with it, and I went, "Well, that'll be me fucked, because I've heard he's running through the desert for 7 days, so if that's the sort of training we're going to be doing, then I'll be knackered." Having a joke, and sure, when we got back to Glasgow, it was actually worse than that, because it was like the full complex at Murray Park. He started putting crazy times on it, where you needed to do a full lap within this. I'm like, Jesus Christ, we've never done it like before. You don't even get time to train for it. But don't get me wrong, a few of the boys were struggling even like Big Dado hated it. The Frenchies didn't like it. And I just said to him, look, I don't think it's going to work between me and you. And he's like, well, get to me and Big Marv as well. Big Marv was one of them. He didn't fancy him. But the strange one was he didn't really know much about the players that were there. He must have knew that he was going to overhaul it and bring in whoever. But I remember he pushed a few to the side. Wouldn't let, he would let us train, wouldn't let us join in any like pre-season games. We went to South Africa, and that was the time when Fernando had the
on the plane
and get sent home. We wouldn't have anything like that. That was a kind of a beginning and end for Fernando as well. And he never really took the culture. He went to the train, because like during Dick, or even though Dick was a tough taskmaster, he would score, all right, we're training at 10 o'clock, and we trained at 10 o'clock. Le Guin would have us in at 8. We won the training to like 11, and then he would say, right, you can go home and come back at 4. And we're like, what do you mean go home and come back at 4? He's like, well, for the afternoon session. I went, well, we need to travel to Hamon through all the traffic and then come back. And he's like, that's the training times. So we end up, there was like me, Fergie, Craig wasn't there, me, Fergie. Can't remember, we end up, we had 6 or 7 days. Now we used to have the wee pool room and the table tennis bit and upstairs in the lounge. They had to take them out and put like couches and that, and so we could try and have a sleep.
Is that right?
We were having to sit about for 4 or 5 hours. Right. So the players weren't having it. And I think you've seen that in the performances, the first few games we struggled. And it wasn't, he's like, don't just keep doing it, we'll come good, but we never was.
So how long were you there until between Le Guin coming and you went away?
The last day of the window, I left. I knew that there was interest at the boy, what's his name? Northern Ireland, Jimmy Jilton.
Mm-hmm.
He was a manager at Ipswich. So I had contact with managers with him, saying that they wanted to speak to me, but that they wanted to, they told me to get released first because they didn't want to pay anything or like that. They would like pay my wages or whatever. And then I think me and Big Marv the same day went and says, right, I'll just let us go. And then like, right, fine.
And is this you talking to Le Guin at the time?
Well, it ended up, I was talking to the was, I don't know where he was. I was talking to Le Guin, I spoke to him a few times in his room. And the ironic thing was they let Ross McCormack go to Motherwell. Mm-hmm. And then they didn't have a clue that it was an under-21 rule. So they've let one of the best youth players go because he kind of struggled a wee bit in pre-season. They let him go. And then they had to bring in, I think they ended up bringing in Eve Kalu, the assistant manager's girlfriend's boyfriend. Yeah, Eve Kalu's daughter's boyfriend.
Sure.
They brought him in. He was one of the players that came in to be like like two young French kids came in.
Just to go on the bench because you had to.
Just to be involved because they needed younger players. And then, obviously, I signed for Derby. And I got injured after about, I think I played about 6 or 7 games and got done my ankle. And Bolly Davis says, look, go and take a week or two, go back and see your family up road. And I came in, I was in seeing the physios at Rangers. And I'm sitting talking, and that Eve Kalu's came out and he's speaking to me. He's like, oh, but what happened and stuff? And then he said to me, would you come back? And I'm like, no. Would you come back? I'm like, this guy's fucking no for real. But I don't know if he was just saying it to see what I would say. But it was just a strange setup. They knew that they were struggling, and they let the players that were like maybe would have ran through a brick wall for anybody just for the club. They let them go. Like even Big Marv. Big Marv would have might not have been the best football player in the world, but what they needed at that time was a defender, and they let him go.
Well, it was a total enigma. We all knew before he came, there was fair warning that he was coming, and you know, we all looked into him and thought, oh, Christ, we're going to get a real proper, this guy's different gravy. Maybe a bit different the way he goes about stuff, but that's what he's going to. I think everybody's expecting. As a fan, your default setting is you want everybody that comes to be great. So maybe know that unusual. But with him, what we thought we were getting and what we got was just two different things. What was it? What do you think? Was it just the way he managed players, or was it tactics? Was it the way he trained? What was his biggest problem?
It wasn't just him. It was his full staff. Mm-hmm. It was like you couldn't. There was nobody in his staff that you could go and speak to. Do you know what I mean? There was nobody you could go and have a word to, even if you didn't know what to go and speak to Alec McLeish. Mm-hmm. I could say to Jan Vouters, Jan, give 2 minutes of your time, man, and speak to him, and Jan would fucking listen to what you've got to say and then try and give you advice to make it better. And but there was named in that would you could go and speak to. There was Everton was like this, and see if you never got on and in that time that he set you. You had to do it again. You just keep doing it until you get in that time. And they don't realise that you're getting more tired, so the likelihood that you're getting in the time is it's never gonna happen until you get fitter. So it ended up, it got to the point where it was like tests every day. We were doing for maybe 2 or 3 weeks, and the training was rubbish. It was like training you used to get when you were 10 and 11, like three in a group, and you'd kick the ball to one and then run and do a 1-2 and then kick it to the other side, and it was like crazy. And then we started getting into like the wee possessions and stuff, and then he would send players off for making a tackle. We need to tackle. It's like, you don't tackle in training. And then I think that was the biggest thing. When the first game we played against Motherwell, and I'm sure we went to Fir Park and struggled, but we won 2-1. And then every away game we were going away and we were struggling. And I think Fergie does, I think he says it, like, played Inverness and get beat at Inverness. And he came in the dressing room and says, fucking no good enough. Had a go at everybody, and the manager's like, no, just keep doing what we're doing. He went, this isn't the Rangers. We need to win every game. And I think that's what he didn't understand. Because you can play in France and you can win the league in France and maybe lose 5 or 6 games, because every team's, apart from maybe 2 or 3 or 4 teams, are a level above. But everybody else can beat each other. And that's Scotland, that's not the same.
In Scotland, if you lose 3 games, you don't win in the league, and maybe there you could get away with losing 6 or 7. And no doubt.
And I think with him, I think I don't know if the rumours are true, but apparently the van was already packed up weeks before that he was leaving. His garage had all the stuff in it. I think he used the stuff with Ferguson excuse to get out. I think he couldn't handle it.
Oh, he's wanting to get out, but then he wanted to walk out. Is it Leon that he'd came for?
He'd won the league.
And
in the Champions League, the squad they had was frightening. And, mm-hmm. and then he came to us, and it was, you're thinking, Jesus Christ, he's...
Because I mean, he had a proper pedigree. It's not like one. I mean, to be fair, even like Phil Clement, if you just looked at what they'd done before they came to Rangers, you would have like win 9 times out of 10. Mm-hmm. And yet, one's came and been able to get a right good start, and the other one just couldn't buy one.
I think the difference is Clement's done his homework in the club, and the big word that he uses all the time is. 1-1-1, doesn't matter how we play or who we're playing, once about winning. Mm-hmm. And you can see him, even the Hearts game last week, 3-1, cruising, a couple of minutes to go, and he's just out in the touchline shouting at Dez, run.
He's not closing down.
Doesn't he want to, like, even though there's a minute to go, you just keep doing it. And that's what you want. You want somebody to be on your case 90 minutes, and the players are doing it for him, aren't they?
Aye. I'm just thinking that, you know, the way that you left would be hard if you were at a club that you liked. Never mind one that you supported. See, when you know that's time up, I need to go, that's got to be a tough decision. And then see that, you know, that's that, I'm packing my bag up and get my wee man bag, put my stuff in it, and I'm out that door. What's that like to live through?
It wasn't easy, because obviously I used to do, it was like, if I never travelled with the boys to training, I would always go, my family was for Springboig, so I would always take my own motor, and then I'd go to see them before I went up the road to Hamilton or whatever. I'd go down to the pub, used to always sit in the pub with the boys and play pool. And I knew it was coming to an end, so I stopped doing that. Do you know what I mean? I stopped doing the things that I was doing. But I can remember he let us go. He never took us to South Africa, sorry. And they arranged 2 or 3 games. against different teams. Like, I think one of them was Partick Thistle. And he's like, you need to play in it. And I'm like, I'm not good enough to go there with yours, but you want me to play in this game? That'd be like 16, 17-year-olds. And he's like, he said, you need to play. And so I said, it was coming up for the 12th of July, wasn't it, in Belfast. So I said to the auntie, man, you need to let me, my head's gone. I need to just get away for a couple of days. Because he was taking the team. And he's like, to me, on you go, just get your head together, but try and get back for the game. I'm like, all right, no worries. And to be fair to Durante, I missed my flight to him. And I phoned him, I said, man, I've missed my flight. And he's like, you're an idiot. So I never got any further than him. He obviously never said anything. But I can remember coming back in the boat with my dad and all that. And he phones me. He's like, Bob, you've been sacked. I'm like, what do you mean I've been sacked? He's like, the manager's found out that you never turned up for the game and that you've been sacked. So I'm on all the way back for on this boat thinking, oh, what's happened, man? I've been sacked. And then he phones me and goes, I'm only kidding you on. You prick. 3 years or something on that boat, man. I'm for shitting myself. And he was only to wind up. That was a difference. If you needed something like that, you could go to Durante, Bomber, all these guys and go, oh, like, fucking heads up my arse.
Nobody in the first team at that point.
Even the doc, see, cause of the hard running, and it wasn't just me. There was maybe like Oli Bernard was still there. He's French or French speaking. Absolutely hated them with a passion. Big Dado Puzzle, French speaking. I know he's Croatian, but hated them. You had the boy Rodriguez, fan.
Ah, yeah.
Hated the training because they normally would come in. They maybe. Under Big Alec would maybe do 20 minutes hard graft, like running, and then it would be off football. Mm-hmm. This was, you're talking about an hour and a half.
It's constant.
Like, constant running. People's backs were gone. I had a bad back anyway, but my back used to seize up, running on hard surfaces. So I said to the doctor, but then these runs for half an hour, 40 minutes, my back's starting to seize up. And he starts going, but it's because you're not fit enough. I said, so how long do you want me to keep doing this before it's, I'm not going to get any further than this. They would never like say, right, but maybe give you a different programme or whatever to try and, no, it was just, that's their wine, that's it.
Aye, it's got to have been tough, mate, play you going through it, but you went down to England, Derby, in the Championship at the time.
Championship, yep, under Billy Davis.
Even at that, out with maybe, that time, the Old Firm games, and potentially maybe, I think Aberdeen were like back in the day, but maybe one or two other games tops. See your mid to lower division Premier SPFL teams. How did that compare with the Championship? Was that a step above the lower levels of SPFL?
Aye. Even, as I said to you earlier, the Championship at that time was a lot of very good players in it, but the football wasn't as great. I don't really like to get the ball down and play now in the Championship, but back then it was more route one, big striker, big centre halves, get it up, get in about whatever. But Bolly Davis tried to change up, and when I spoke to him, he's like, we've got Seth Johnson was there. We want to kind of try and play together and build a team around about yous and to go and like push for the Premier League. And I was like, fuck, as soon as he said things like that, I was like, that's what I'm looking for. And then you don't, until you actually get there, because when you're playing with Rangers, you don't look at any other teams, do you know what I mean? And then I've looked at the league and they were third bottom, and I'm thinking, no, what's going to happen here? But he's like, look, don't, I've just come into the club and I've got these players, but we'll do well and all that. And to be fair to him, it was true to his word. He brought in experienced player Michael Johnson, big Darren Moore, boy Mark Edward, they played with Norwich for years. Really, really good team, experienced team. And totally different for playing in Scotland though.
Mm-hmm. And they got promoted, didn't they?
Came up through the playoffs.
And then before you left, did you play any games in the Premiership before you left then?
I went on loan. I got an ankle operation maybe just before Christmas. I was out for three months. nicking back, but struggling. And then played, was in and out of the team. Played in one of the playoff semi-finals against Southampton. I was miles off, I was struggling. And I'd sat down and I spoke to Bully and I was like, I'm struggling to fucking run properly. He's like, I know. And then he's like, we want you to be involved for the playoff, the final. And it was like, we've got a 2-week build up to it, and I was in training and I still wasn't anywhere near it. And I said to him, I'm no fit. He says, there's no point in me trying to play or being on the bench and never near it. And then he's like, right, fine. So the boys, Stephen Pearson and I had signed, and he ended up, he scored the winner. It was strange because even though these players were experienced, it was acceptable to draw and maybe draw two games and win one and then get beat one. But I can remember we drew with Sunderland the first game I was there. I never played, and then I played on my first game was against Wolves at Molineux, and they were favourites to go up straight through, and we beat them 1-0, and everybody's gone like that. That's when they started seeing, oh, this team are no bad here. Mm-hmm. And I forgot what I was going to say. We played against Preston, and that was a big game for the gaffer because that was all club and it fell out with them and stuff. So we ended up drawing with them, but we battered them. And I've come in after the game and I'm going, that's fucking no good enough, John. We need to start winning games like this. And you can see all the boys looking at me as if, what the fuck? And then I think the next game we get put out of the cup after Doncaster away. So going off my nut then. And then the boys are like, why do you go off your nut after the game? I'm like, because getting beat's not acceptable. And then one of the boys had to say to me, that's what happens down here, it's not the same. And I couldn't get it. Just because of the mentality I had when I was at Rangers, that you have to win every game. I just took that down there. And then when Stephen Pearson came, he was the same. He couldn't accept getting beat or drawn. So it was good that, that's probably the reason why Bully brought players like that in. Aye. To try and create that mentality.
Aye. It's weird, isn't it? That, and it must be a culture shock. I mean, Derby are a decent-sized club. Nice stadium, got a good history and whatever. But for Rangers, with all due respect to Derby, their fans and all, everybody that ever played for them, it's no anywhere near the level at Rangers. The training, the training facilities, was there anything else that you just, when you arrive there, you think, Chris, this isn't right, because what you were used to was so much better?
No, to be fair, I went, the first time I spoke to Bully Davis about Gondon, I met him in the Halton and East Kilbride. We sat down, had a coffee and that, and he told me about his plans for the club was. And to be fair, I was already engrossed with him. I loved the way he was talking, what his plans were. Because I'd never met Bully Davis before. I'd obviously seen him on the TV and that, and knew that he'd played for Rangers when he was younger. But meeting him and speaking to him, just felt as if I knew him for a few years. Then he's like to me, look, don't make a decision, come down, we'll bring you down, show you the stadium, training ground and all that. And I went down, it was at night time, it must have been about 6 o'clock, so they've put all the lights on in the stadium. So, and it was, I'm like, fucking hell, stadium was unbelievable. And he's like, all right, we'll come, I'll take you to the training ground. But it was at night and you couldn't really see it, and so we'd drive into the car park. He took us inside the training ground. Wasn't it like Murray Park, but it was an older kind of a building. It had all the mod cons inside it. Everything that you need. There was nothing extravagant, but it was good. And then I went back the next day. Seen the pitches and all that, they were frightening. The youth set up, so the first team were it, and we all went in the same building. And then I was like, I think this is for me. Mm-hmm. I made the decision.
Then you went Motherwell a wee bit, and then ended up at Australia. Did you and Charlie get you at the same time, or was one of you there first? And
I was meant to go when Charlie went. Mm-hmm. So I kind of shut myself and I went,
don't
know.
Charlie
are
going to Australia.
No, it was either me or him. It was going. Wasn't they both at the same time? So Craig had also phoned me and said to me, "Do you, you fancy coming to Australia and playing? I'm like, I'd played for Motherwell the second half of the season when I'd left Derby. We finished third. We were in Europe. And Mark McGee he's like, I want you to sign for another year. And I was like, but there was rumours that he was going to Hearts. And I'm going, I'm no right about to sign for Motherwell and you go to Hearts. And then it's not the same. Because even as much as what people don't like about Mark McGee, he was brilliant coaching on. He got Motherwell playing really well at that time. I want to know what you're doing first before I make a decision on if I'm staying at Motherwell or no. So in that time, spoke to Craig. Frank Farina had phoned me and said, why don't you come over? That was the manager at the time. And I was like, can you give me time to think about it? And I just, the long flight and how far away from your family, I shut myself. I was like, can't do it. So I'll have another year at Motherwell and be in Europe and that, because the gaffer had already committed. So then Charlie went. I can't remember where Charlie went. I think he went for maybe Belgium or something. Or not.
Norway? Because he was Belgium and Norway, wasn't he?
But she might have went for there. And then the next year I'd played with Motherwell and I'd fell out. Well, not fell out with the gaffer, but I hadn't played a few games and I was like, I'd spoke to Frank Farina again, he phoned me again and said, look, there's another place come up, would you fancy coming out? And I was like, why don't I come out when it's the holidays, come out and see what it's like, the setup and stuff, maybe for a month or whatever, and you can have a look at me, I can have a look at the place and take it for there. And he's like, brilliant. Flew over. My first day, went to rehab rehabilitation day, so they don't train, they go to that swimming bath, but it's outdoor in the day, so you're like not getting injuries and that's anti-prevention stuff. Done that, went for a swim. I'm thinking, what the hell's happening here? When do you train? And then like, no, you do this every Monday. So you play on a Saturday, travel back to wherever you're playing on a Sunday, do that on a Monday, and then start training again for the rest of the week, Tuesday. And went up to a place up north, Cairns, and Australia, played against Fergie's team. Mm-hmm. And he's like to me, I spoke to Fergie, we played to his team, went a night out, and then Fergie's like to me, don't sign with him. I'm like, what do you mean don't sign with him? He's like, come and sign for us. And I'm like, fuck off, I'm not going to be up here, man, it's the back of beyond. He's like, no, we don't play here. This is just where we've came for pre-season. I was like, nah, man, nah. Because his team was just a new team starting up. And Officer Craig and Charlie were at Brisbane North, so I was like, no. So then I kind of, after that, I was like, I want to sing. So that's what happened.
And Charlie talks fondly about his time in Australia. Did you have equally as good experiences or
I loved it, but it was Charlie's older than me as well, so he knew he was coming to the end of his career. I wasn't really thinking about it that way. I just wanted to go and play and enjoy my football again. But it was the same. It's like being back at Angel again when you're 18. It was like a party kind of a
different vibe.
It was like we stayed in the Gold Coast, so we were travelling about the training, travelling our back. And then by the time you get back into where we lived, it was 12 o'clock in the afternoon. So you're going to the pub for your lunch, and then you're having a couple of beers or a glass of wine, and then before you know it, it's 7 o'clock at night. And then you're having to go to your bed to get up at 6 in the morning for training again. And it was brilliant, but it just wasn't probably not that new right enough, but it wasn't as professional as it should be. But as I say, it was some place to be, and to give credit to the league, there was a good league, good players in it.
Aye, there's always some decent players you see from there. And the other thing is the way the Australians do sport for their kids. I was at the Australian Sports Institute or something like that. The amount of players that program's produced over the years, they know how to, not even just football, sport in general, they take it serious.
Well, I think only in so many states is football like the main sport. You've got Australian
Aussie rules.
You've got rugby league,
cricket,
and then you've got football. So But I think the time that I was there was a lot of like ex players and stuff starting their own like academies and things like that. And I think Big Craig started one with one of his business partners, and it got within a short period of time it got quite big. And it ended up being a lot of business that they ended up starting off. So I think now that's got bigger, and football's kind of taken over now, and you can see that with the Australian national team are starting to come back to what it used to be years ago.
A good level. So came home. Did you do a full year?
I done a year, yeah.
And then I'm sure Charlie told me they got a new manager.
Aye, Big Ange.
Did you ever meet him, or were you gone before he came
in? No. I played in Angie's first game and I broke my nose. And this is where, see, when I came back, I gave Dan Spellers in the papers saying that shit, maybe shit coaching stuff, like the training was shit, sorry. And it was probably a disservice to him because it wasn't him that took the training. It was a Scottish guy called Ken Stead that took the training when I was there. And it was like being honestly back at primary school when you're holding each other's hands and running up around a cone. And Ange was over, I can remember this day, Ange was over talking to like, it was like a coaching day they were calling it. So all the coaches for the suburbs would come in and watch your training. But we're doing wheelbarrow races and guys that have played in the champ, like, Oz is fucking get so many caps for Australia, captain of Australia. It was crazy. And then you're like, what the hell's happening here? But to be fair, when I look back and I've done the sessions, they were actually good. I actually took a couple of them for myself and still do them.
I really appreciate the hours that some of you are investing into watching the podcast that we've done in the past. But I'd like to ask you to do me one favour that would take you seconds. If you enjoy the show, please hit the subscribe button. And if you enjoy any show in particular, please click on the thumbs up. It'll make a massive difference to the podcast. So thanks very much for your continued support, feedback, and I hope you enjoy this one.